We are here this evening talking with Roland Mann. He is the what would you say, the CEO of Silver Line Comics?
You know, it's funny that you say that, because let's see if I can dig up a card here real quick. I do have a business card, and on my business card, it simply says head honcho.
Head honcho. Okay.
Head honcho on my business card. So
we will go with head honcho. So Roland Mann is the head honcho of Silver Line Comics, and he has put out a bunch of different comics, some of them very popular, and I can't remember the name of a few of them off the top of my head. We've talked about them before, but thank you and welcome back to the show. Glad you wanted to join us again.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me back. As I told you before, you know, I love comics, love to talk about comics. So shut me up if I run my mouth too much.
No, let's talk about comics. So let's get right into basically your new project. You've got a project going on Kickstarter, and it's running for at least another week and a half or so. Is that correct?
Yep. It ends. We've tried to time it. You know, we stream on Silverline streams on Sundays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays now. And so we tried to time it where it's going to end on our Sunday, during our Sunday stream. So,
I see. So are you streaming on Twitch, or what are you streaming on?
Yeah, we stream, we use Restream. And so we stream, you can find us on Facebook, YouTube, and on Twitch, all three of those places. So,
and so what normally are you guys doing on your stream?
You know, we talk about, we spend a lot of time talking about making comics, obviously, because that's what all of us do. So we spend our time talking about different elements, from, you know, the things that we like in covers, the things that we like in titles, logos, that kind of thing. I know that the Wednesday Bunch last week from last, they spent like a whole 2 hours talking about covers and the artwork on them. We talk about the projects that we're working on. Obviously, you know, we promote our Kickstarters and the projects that we're doing, our appearances. We've got a Silverline has a big appearance coming up in September. There's going to be about a dozen of us show up at Daytona Beach Comic Con.
Oh, okay.
So, it's going to be the largest gathering of Silverline creatives, I guess, ever in the history of Silverline.
Well, there you go. Well, that's awesome.
It's going to be fun.
First of all, let's talk a little bit more about the Kickstarter. What exactly is the comic that you're doing with this Kickstarter?
So we are doing actually two comics. It's a what we're doing is a classic flip book. People have it when they talk to me, a lot of times they toss out that classic word like it's an insult. I don't take it that way. You know, I think classic, man. When I think classic, I'm thinking good stuff. You know, I'm thinking Jack Kirby and Joe Sinnott, and, you know, I'm thinking classic goodness, you know.
Okay.
But we're doing a classic flip book, so that you've got one comic on one side, you read it halfway through, right? And literally you flip the book over and then you read the other one, you know, from that part to the center of the book. So it's two books in one. You get two covers. You flip them. We've done them, I guess we've done flip books now. This will be probably our fifth one, I think. I'd have to go back and look exactly. And they've gone over pretty well. I think that the flip book aspect of it is exclusive to Kickstarter. So if you're like, hey, I want the Kickstarter cover, I want the flip book, you have to support the Kickstarter, okay? The books are going to be available. I mean, we're making comics because we want people to read them, right? So even after the Kickstarter, the books will be available, but the Kickstarter exclusive version is not going to be available outside of the Kickstarter. So so when you come to see us in September at Daytona Beach Comic Con, it's not like you're going to say, hey, I wasn't able to back the Kickstarter, I can't get the books. No, you can get the books. Mm-hmm. You just can't get the Kickstarter version of the book.
Version of the books. Gotcha.
Right. Yeah. So, so the two books that we're kickstarting this month, they're two very different books. I wrote both of them.
Okay.
The first one I'll tell you about is called The Silverline Team Up, featuring Champion and Miss Fury. Miss Fury is, of course, based off of the public domain character created by Tark Mills.
Uh-huh.
If anybody's familiar with any of my work, they may remember that I actually wrote a Miss Fury. I wrote the first Miss Fury miniseries after Tark Mills, essentially. Tark Mills created in the, at least to my knowledge, okay, mm-hmm. I should say that. So Tark Mills created in the 40s. Malibu Comics in the early 90s approached me with the idea of doing a Miss Fury miniseries. Mm-hmm. And so I did a Miss Fury miniseries with my then Cat Mouse collaborator, Mitch Bird. And Miss Fury, the intent was to bring her into the Protectors, which I became editor of. And she was in a couple of issues, but the Protectors ended before we could actually do anything with it. And of course, Miss Fury has now been seen, you know, Billy Tucci has done some Miss Fury, and, you know, one or two other publishers have done some Miss Fury because it's all public domain. Uh-huh. I had been planning on, I had kind of wanted to revisit Miss Fury since the 90s because I enjoyed the character quite a bit, and I felt I still had some more stories to tell, but I wasn't able to get to them. You know, that's just the way publishing works sometimes.
Right.
Champion is a character that was born in the pages of Cat Mouse from the 1990s.
Okay.
Those who read, now I will say this, you don't have to have read either the Miss Fury, obviously, because I mean that's a different book anyway.
Sure.
But you don't have to have read Cat and Mouse to be familiar with what's going on in this story at all. It's you can pick it up. Is it issue number one, and you can be right there. Now, if you're familiar with the character already anyway, it's just gonna enhance your enjoyment. But Champion was born in the pages of Miss Fury as the Chicago Champion. He was basically a firefighter who put on a t-shirt around his face and pulled people from burning buildings and became kind of a local hero. Mm-hmm. And realized that he could actually inspire people just from doing things that he was kind of already doing anyway.
Uh-huh.
He's a Boy Scout. You know, he is one of these guys that he truly wants to help people. And that's part of why he was a firefighter, why he is a firefighter. It's kind of why he risked his life to pull people out of burning buildings. He genuinely wants to help. Mm-hmm. And so the story starts off that, it shows him doing some of this, but it shows him feeling really weird and strange. So he goes to his friend who is a physician, right? He has got a doctor pal. And his doctor pal says, you know, you're fit as a fiddle. I don't see anything wrong with you. I think the stresses of your personal life are just getting to you because he is having problems in his personal life. He's got a divorce. And of course, you know, he's got a kid as part of that divorce. And so, you know, he's kind of the one responsible for messing that up. So he feels, you know, he feels terrible about it. And his whole life is kind of a mess. Mm-hmm. And so his physician says, well, I'm going to New Orleans. Why don't you come with me just to get away? Take a break. I'll show you my new clinic. I'm opening a new clinic down there. I'll show you that. You could just come and just get away from it all. Right. And ultimately he decides that's what he is going to do. And so he accompanies his physician pal to New Orleans, only to find out that the troubles follow him to New Orleans.
Oh, no.
And so he ends up in New Orleans, the troubles follow him, and that's where he ends up meeting Miss Fury. And if anybody is familiar with any of my work, they also know that I like to set my stories in New Orleans. So, you know, there's a popular crime-fighting duo that's also sitting there, Cat and Mouse. I'm not saying they're going to show up. I'm just saying that, you know, they're also set in that area. So,
okay. But you're not saying they're going to show up.
I'm not saying they're going to show up. Okay. Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
That's fair enough.
I mean, it is, you know, Champion and Miss Fury. So,
right.
But yeah, it's and it's done by the artwork is, I mean, it's just beautiful. I don't know if you had a chance to look at any of the stuff that I sent you yet, but man, it is gorgeous. It's done by pencils are done by a Kubert School grad. He just graduated last year. Peter Clinton. Okay. It's inked by my longtime friend and comic veteran Thomas Flormonte. Tommy used to I knew Tommy back, you know, when I was in college. He used to when I was an editor at Malibu, he inked a bunch of the Protector stuff. He inked for Ultraverse when I think he inked a bunch of Nightman for me. And then the colorist is Roberta Conroy, who is also a Malibu alum. She was a part of the big group of Malibu colorists in the 1990s. And it is just an awesome looking book. If you like fun superheroes, then this is the book for you.
Nice.
This is not one of those dark and grim and gritty, you know, blood everywhere kind of things. This is a fun superhero book.
Okay. All right. That sounds great. And you said now if you flip it over, there's a different type of a different story.
Mm-hmm.
And which one is that?
There
one?
Is. And that one's called Bear.
Okay.
So where's my little pitch? I have a little pitch written out for it.
I actually didn't realize that in the stuff you sent me that you may have included both of those stories. I did see this one. I did look at this one. I was like, okay, this it piqued my interest because it was definitely like, I can see, you know, where the material came from, at least a little bit. But I was like, okay, what is he doing with this story here? Because this is not what I read when I was a kid.
No. Well, and I'll tell you before I give the little pitch to you, the story was born from, you know, I'm a dad. I got two kids that they're no longer young, but you know, when they were young, we used to watch you know, cartoons, animation. We used to read a lot of books to them. I read so much Winnie the Pooh. I read, you know, one of my all time favorites is Peter Pan. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the whole idea of the imagination and what it can do for you as a person. So the inspiration comes from watching a lot of those, and you know, there's a scene, and I really need to rewatch it again so I can give you an exact quote. But there's a scene from Winnie the Pooh in which, you know, I think they're talking about death somehow, some way, in the Winnie the Pooh kind of way.
Right.
And Pooh says something like, you know, how old will you live to be? And he says, I'm going to live to be 100. And Pooh says, well, how old will I be? And he goes, you'll be 99. And, it was that line that kind of got me to thinking, you know, what happens to Pooh when Christopher Robin dies?
Yeah.
You know, what does happen to Pooh? You know, he kind of talks about it. I'm like, so, and it kind of got my mind thinking, well, you know, what happens to that, you know, to not just Pooh, but there's a whole 100-acre woods, there's all of this, you know, what happens to all these toys, right?
Right.
And so that was kind of the impetus for the story. And then now my pitch goes a little bit like, when the kid goes missing from the playroom, most of the inhabitants think he's dead, but not Bear, who is a stuffed bear. He tells everyone the kid is coming back to get them and take them to the big house where he's working on a new room for them all. The problem is no one believes Bear, and chaos and lawlessness erupts, leaving Bear alone to try to stop it.
Right. And for the audience, we want to make sure that they realize you are not saying Bear wrong. The name of Bear is B-E-A-H, correct? Is that how you spelled it?
Yes.
So he's not. Yeah. He doesn't have a speech impediment, folks. That's the name of the character is Bear. So it's a fascinating. I like. It's a fascinating story, and I'm intrigued. Very intrigued. So.
Well, good. That's what you're supposed to be, right? You're supposed to be intrigued and supposed to be intrigued enough that makes you say, hey, I'm intrigued enough. I want to go buy this and check this out.
Participate.
Now you talk about the pronunciation, right? Now, so I'm from Mississippi and, so I don't get too worked up about it. You know, Haley, the artist for Bea, she had a hardest time wrapping her head around it. She's like, Bea. She's like, Haley, it really doesn't matter what you say, right?
Right.
It's Bear, right? And you can even say Bear if you want to. But what I tried to tell her, I said, did you ever see, and Haley's younger, so she hadn't seen it, right? But the movie Smokey and the Bandit, do you remember that at all?
Oh,
have
absolutely.
You seen that?
You betcha.
Okay. So the old sheriff, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just imagine this. I'm going to get that Bea.
Yeah.
That's the way I imagine Bea said, right?
Yeah.
It's Bea. I'm going to get that Bea.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
I don't get, if you come up to me and say, hey, I like Bea, right? I'm going to say, is it Budweiser?
Or right.
If you just come up and say, hey, I like Bear, that's fine. I don't get too worked up about the title, but yes, mm-hmm. it is an intentional B-E-A-H.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just because our explanation is that's the way the kids said it. You know, the kids said, I want a Bea. I want a Bea, right?
So talk a little bit about the artwork on that one. Hopefully this doesn't sound insulting when I say this, but when I was looking at the artwork, it felt a little bit more,
childish.
Exactly. More cartoonish than anything.
Yeah. And that's the thing about, I think that's the thing about art. We have had a tendency to associate a certain, certain age demographics with certain styles of art, but there's nothing that says this kind of art can't be for non-children.
Yeah. Audience, and it was beautiful. Right? Don't get me wrong. It's still beautiful artwork. Yeah. I don't want to, I want to imply that it wasn't, it was really, it's really pretty, but
No, but I, and I totally get you. You look at it and your first thought is, oh, this is a kid's book.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's just because I think that's the way we've been ingrained to think about that kind of art. I met Haley a couple of years ago, I guess about 2 years ago. She sat across from me at a local convention, and I kept seeing her. She had a book of her own that she had done. And, you know, so I went across the aisle and met her, and we talked a little bit, and it was a, you know, it was one of these conventions that it had its, you know, wanes and you know, so there was plenty of time I could go talk to her as well as being busy. And this was pre plague. So, you know, there were still lots of people out and about. Well, when we kind of, you know, we kind of became convention friendly, I guess is probably the right word to use. We didn't, you know, we didn't instantly become best pals or anything. But then I saw her again at another show, and then I saw her again at another show. And I just kept going back to look at her art. I'm like, you know, this is really different. It's different than the kind of thing that I'm accustomed. You know, I've been doing comics for almost 30 years. And it's different than any kind of artwork I've ever worked with before. And so I just asked her, I said, look, you ever interested in collaborating with anybody? And she said, yeah, I would love to. So I'm like, okay. I reached into kind of my story archives and pitched her some stories. I want to say I probably pitched her three stories, and she's like, the one that I'm interested in. And so that's kind of how we did, you know, how she and I got connected. But it was her artwork that kind of stood out to me, because, you know, it's not born of Jack Kirby DNA. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't look at it and say, oh, this is inspired by, you know, Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko. And no, she's not, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Let's talk just a little bit about, you've mentioned Malibu a couple of times, Malibu comics.
Sure.
And so we talked a little bit, well, we talked a lot actually about the transition of Malibu into Marvel. Explain, talk again, just a little bit about, you know, how you got involved with Malibu and just that whole trajectory there.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, it's I don't mind talking about that at all. And a lot of people actually like to talk about it, because there's a, like me, there is a fondness for what Malibu was and what the Ultraverse was, you know, by fans still today. And I look back on Malibu as probably one of my favorite periods of my life in comics. It was a great place to work. It was a great, there was a great spirit there, great attitude, a great energy. And, you know, if I can accomplish anything with Silverline as, you know, I look to build it up again, it would be, I would love to capture the energy and the spirit of independence that Malibu had in the day. I got involved with them in the late 80s, when I was trying to find a home for my series called Cat and Mouse. Malibu is the company that ended up taking us, and me and my the co-creator, Mitch Bird, we ended up doing 2 years worth of comics of Cat and Mouse for them. That led both of us on to other work. I went on to do, obviously, Miss Fury. I went on to do The Arrow and Planet of the Apes and all kinds of different projects for Malibu. And then in the
And then when you say you went on to do, you are the writer of these comic
correct
comic books, right? Okay.
Right. Yes. I'm sorry. So I was writing a whole bunch of stuff for them as a freelancer. And then in the early 90s, I met with Chris Alm, who was the editor in chief of Malibu at Atlanta Dragon Con. And after the show at dinner, we just got to talking about the future of Malibu and what do they want to do and that kind of thing. And he told me they were in the process of building a bullpen like the classic Marvel bullpen. And of course, as a Marvel zombie kid, I was like, ooh, that sounds like a lot of fun. I would like to be involved. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that I said I wanted to be involved surprised him because, he said, I didn't think you would want to leave the South, you know? And I said, well, you know, I don't really want to leave the South, but if there's this opportunity that comes up that I can be a part of this, yeah, absolutely. Don't, you know, at least make me tell you no. Right. And so 2 weeks later, they called back with an offer for me to move to California and become an editor. And so I moved to California and became an editor of the Genesis line of books, which people might remember, Protectors, Dinosaurs for Hire, X-Mutants. I did some other odds and ends. But mostly that line of books, which included Man of War, Ferret, Gravestone. And then the Ultraverse was launched, and Malibu made an in-house decision that it really wasn't a smart idea to have two superhero universes. Uh-huh. And since the Ultraverse was launched great fireworks and to a lot of retailer support, they decided that the Protectors line of comics was going to go away. And that's when I shifted over and became an Ultraverse editor. And then I edited about half of the Ultraverse titles. I edited titles such as Sludge, Strangers, Nightman, Prototype, Rune. After Barry Windsor-Smith left Rune, I became the editor. That's all I can think of for right off the top of my head. But and so I was that until Marvel bought the company, and I became a managing editor. Mm-hmm. After Marvel's purchase. And then, of course, Marvel declared bankruptcy and shut everything down, and Malibu was axed. So that was kind of my stint at Malibu, and that's where a lot of people remember me from.
Okay. Right on. Okay, so what year was that? How long did Malibu last? Let's ask that question.
So I think in some form or fashion, Malibu, I think not as Malibu, but as the some of the various imprints they had, I think they were starting around 1986.
Okay? Oh, okay.
They were part of that post Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle black and white boom that we saw in the late 80s. And so you had Air Sail, you had Adventure, you had Eternity, and all of those were brought up under sort of the Malibu fold. Mm-hmm. So when I went to work for them, they were actually called Malibu Graphics. Okay.
Oh, okay.
To be honest with you, I'm not sure if the corporate name ever changed until Marvel bought them.
Oh, okay.
But that would have been 88, 89, something like that. Marvel bought the company in 94. And then Marvel shut everything down in 96. So
oh, I see.
It was pretty short lived there in the, but it was all, late 80s, early 90s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of all of these comics and whatnot, there's a whole, geekdom, if you will, that totally missed out on growing up. Like I basically read, for some reason, I just never really got into comic books. And the only one that I ever got into for some odd reason was Transformers, put out by Marvel back in the 80s. I thought it was a really good storyline. I mean, I didn't like any of the crossovers they did with Transformers versus G.I. Joe and all that other stuff they did, but that's really it. And so I missed out. Now, of course, I'm like everybody else. I love the Marvel movies and of course, sure. Knew all of the famous, you know, superheroes, the Hulk and Captain America, and had my underwear to prove it. But you know that, but I just didn't get into it. And I know there's this whole world of indie comics that I have never been into that I've started to discover, you know, just a little bit here and there. It's just like The Walking Dead or Neil right. Gaiman, some Neil Gaiman comics that are out mm-hmm. there and whatnot. Just, but it's totally beyond me, and I don't know why, but I've just totally lost, you know, been oblivious to that whole thing.
Yeah. And you know, I don't feel bad. You're not the only one. I think initially, part of what it is, I think, is you know, Marvel, DC, they've got the marketing muscle behind
them.
Yeah,
they sure do.
So you know, they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. Comic books are, movies, comic books, kind of the same. Mm-hmm. The other thing, and something I don't see near as bad today as I did when I first got started, is that a lot of readers, particularly American readers, are averse to anything that doesn't have color in it. Mm. And you know, certainly in the late 80s and even into the 90s, it was too expensive to print an independent comic book in color, because mm-hmm. you just couldn't, for the most part, now you couldn't yeah. sell that many copies.
Yeah.
And so that's why we see, you know, so many independent comics in black and white, because it was, you know, you could afford to do that. Mm-hmm. Readers today are a little more, and I think this is probably thanks to manga, because, you know,
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Yeah. My kid
a lot
is
of manga.
So into manga, and they're almost all black and white.
Yes. Right. Yeah. And so it doesn't bother them so much to come up and see a black and white comic. Now,
yeah.
as one who loves black and white artwork and who, you know, created a lot of black and white comics in the past, I love to see this. Yeah. Right. There is still a facet, though, of the audience who picks it up and will see it in black and white and still think, you know, I need to see some color.
Yeah.
And so yeah, there's that. Now, what I would encourage you to do, okay, now I'm a big proponent of independent comics, as it probably doesn't surprise you. Mm-hmm. I stopped reading Marvel and DC nearly 20 years ago now. you can see the video. I mean, I still got a lot of, you know, that's a bunch of Marvels back there. And, you know,
yeah.
still
yeah.
Spider-Man's, Avengers, you know, Captain America's, that's still that stuff from the, you know, 60s and 70s and 80s is still classic, great storytelling.
Yeah.
But you can almost, even in the middle of Idaho, I would guess, you can probably find a show that has cheap boxes. And I would highly recommend you just take $20 and say, I'm going to go spend my $20 in the cheap boxes and just flip and see what you can find. And you're going to find a lot of 90s glut stuff. So you're going to see yeah. a lot of the Marvel and DC books from the 90s that they just, you know, they were just printing, right. Don't buy those. That's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Look for the stuff from the early 90s and from the 80s from the independent publishers. You're going to find things like the Elementals, mm-hmm. which were really, really good. Now, they were in color. They were mm-hmm. really good. You're going to find a book called Scout, done by Tim Truman, one of my all-time favorite comic creators, you know. And you're going to find these all for, you know, 50 cents and a dollar a piece. Mm. You can put all together, you know, for the most part, you can put together full runs of a lot of these independent comics from the 1980s and they're very good. And that's the thing about it, is that you've just never heard of them, but they're really good, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I think that's part of the problem with the small town that I grew up in here, is that I don't recall us having a comic book store when I was a kid. The only
right.
outlets that we had for comic books would have been the B. Daltons in the mall. You know, I mean, that was, and so of course, all you're going to find is Marvel and DC comics on the nice little, you know, carousel rack that they would have that would have the comics that's right. on them in the front of the store. And that was be about it. I think there was a comic store that started when I was in high school, but it was clear across town and I didn't venture out there very much. And it was
tough to ride your bike that far, right?
Right. and I don't think it, yeah, that's a long ways, but I don't think it lasted very long. Now, yeah. having said that, I think there are actually, well, there's one, you know, honest to God comic book store in this town that's actually been in existence for quite a while now. I haven't been there since I've been back here in town, and that's been 13 years I've lived here, and ventured in there. So I should probably go support my local comic book store and do exactly what you just said and check out some of their, maybe their cheap bins, and try to see if they've got some of those independent comic books, because I would love to get into some of this stuff and start. I mean, because I am a geek at heart. I'm about as geeky as they get, but for some reason, this whole side of geekdom is just totally... just totally went past me. But, you know, speaking with you and understanding a little bit about how the industry works and some of the fine stories and artwork that have been out there over the years, I want to check some of it out.
And you know, I tell people when someone tells me, well, you know, I don't read comics because I don't like superheroes.
Yeah.
And I say, you know, well, okay, then you don't go see movies because you don't like superheroes, right? Well, no. I go see the superheroes that the movies aren't superheroes. I'm like, okay. So in the same way that film has been dominated over the last, 15 years by superheroes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think anyone would argue that point.
No.
Superheroes dominate.
That's right.
But there's other movies out there. Yeah. You know, there's horror movies, there's mystery movies, there's science fiction movies. Comics are the same way. Superheroes dominate the medium.
Right.
But there's a lot of really good stuff out there. And so if you like horror, if you like mystery, if you like romance, you know, these things are out there. You just got to dig a little bit deeper and you got to look a little bit harder.
Right. And you know, that's obvious. Even I know these aren't necessarily independent, but, you know, some of the comics that Neil Gaiman has put out, they're not superhero stories, but they are fantastic, and the artwork in those are amazing. And the same with The Walking Dead. Of course, The Walking Dead is so famous because of the TV series, but it was out years before they ever made a TV series, wasn't it? I mean,
yes, it was. Yeah,
yeah. But
there's an interesting story on how that was pitched, by the way.
Really?
Robert Kirkman had pitched his zombie story to Image, and they said, no, we don't want to do zombies. He pitched it to him again. No, we don't want to do zombies, you know. And they basically just told him, no, they don't want to do zombies. And so he gets in the vehicle with the I can't remember, the guy was a publisher or editor-in-chief at the time. Anyway, the big bucky muck at Image. And he's taking him to the airport right after a convention. And he says, so, hey, I want to pitch my story to you. And he starts talking. He goes, no, you already pitched this story to, you know, well, no, we're not going to do zombies.
Yeah.
And then he says, oh, didn't Jim tell you? I changed it. And Jim, he was meaning Jim Valentino, right? Uh-huh. And he says, no, I didn't. He didn't tell me. What did you change? He says, oh, I changed all that. It's all about aliens now. And that, aliens have come to Earth, and this is just food for them. They're just growing, all the zombies are just all food for them. And he's like, okay, that's interesting enough that, okay, we'll do your story, right? That sounds pretty interesting, right? And so so they, you know, agree to publish The Walking Dead. And about 4, 5, 6 issues into it, Eric Stevenson, who is the guy I'm talking about, is reading the comic, and he's like, where are the aliens? Where are the Easter eggs that you know, he said he was going to put in there to show people that, you know, to lead up to the idea it was aliens.
Uh-huh.
And he calls him, right? And he calls him and says, so, hey, I've been reading Walking Dead. I've been really enjoying The Walking Dead, but where are the aliens? Talked about it. He goes, oh, there's no way. I just told you that. So you do a publisher story.
You know, whatever it takes sometimes, so, right? Whatever it takes.
You know? Yeah. I tell my students that's probably not the smartest approach for them to take in trying to pitch a story.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, by the time Eric that, the walk is like, okay, well, so does it need aliens? I don't guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's, you know, I don't know how well the comic did before the TV series started, but you know, that whole concept has made millions of dollars for everybody, and it will continue to make it. Forever.
It was fairly regularly in the top 10 to 15 comic books in the nation every month
before the series started.
And here's the other thing.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. And here's this color comics, Batman and Spider-Man and X-Men, you can look, you know, you can look at the top comics and you'll see Batman, Spider-Man, X-Men, Walking Dead, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't unusual. It was there around, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, something like that.
Yeah.
In black and white. It made a lot of money.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Well, and it, you know, I haven't actually read any of the comic strips, but if it's as gripping as the TV, and I know the TV series is verged from the comic strip, you know, in a lot of different ways, but if it's as gripping as that is, then yeah, I can see why it was so successful, because it's an amazing, amazing story. So,
yeah.
So there was some other question I was going to ask you, and now I can't remember what it was. We got to probably get off because my computer is deciding it's not happy with the Wi-Fi signal right now, I guess. But luckily, unlike last time where we had to do it all over again, I think everything's working great. So we won't hear that
recording message.
Yeah, right. Isn't that a good thing?
I'm glad they do that. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you're trying to build Silverline back up. Is that correct? Are you really putting a lot of energy and effort into building the company back up again?
No, I am working pretty hard to kind of bring Silverline back to a reasonable small publishing company. I tried to count the other day, and I really probably ought to sit down and do it. But I think in the last years, and you know, that's quite a bit for a husband and wife operate. You know, my spare bedroom here in my house. But I, you know, it's really thanks to the team that we built. And I will say this, without this team, there's about 30 creators associated in different aspects with Silverline. Mm-hmm. And what we really tried to do is kind of foster, again, I keep pointing back to Malibu days. We've tried to foster an audience. I love working with people that I like. And so I want to get people in to Silverline who enjoy making comics. Of course, you know, we want to make money. That's absolutely, you know, a musician doesn't just create, you know, music just to create music. We'll get enjoyment from it. Talk to someone and they say, hey, I read this. I really enjoy it. I can't wait for the next issue to come out. Because then I know that I've succeeded as a writer and letting this person escape whatever it is, you know, whether it's the harsh realities of COVID or whatever, lets them escape for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And so the team that we built, the family that we built, is really part of what's really making Silverline go this time. There's just, like I said, there's about 30 people involved, pencilers, inkers, you know, colorists, folks who are doing, you know, press release, websites and streams. There's a lot of people involved, and I think that because they do get that feeling of camaraderie, that feeling of family. And, you know, when we do I mentioned our streams to you earlier, you know, when we do our streams, it's really just kind of like us just hanging out and talking, you know, we're having a good time as we're creating, you know, but we're just kind of hanging out on a stream.
That's great. Yeah. That's awesome.
So that was a long-winded way to answer your question. Yes.
That's great. Well, Roland, it has been a pleasure talking to you again this evening, and we wish you the best on the Kickstarter. How close are you to meeting your goal for this one?
So the last I looked, I was within about $250. We are very, very close. If you give me a second, I'll type it in and see what it tells
is. The way Kickstarter set up is, if you meet your goal, people can still give, correct?
Yes.
Okay. That's correct. Awesome.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It Kickstarter is an all or nothing. It's and so if you don't make it, you get nothing. If you do make it, you get what you get. So we've got $3,748 of a $4,000 goal. So $3,748, $848, $948. So yeah, about $252 it looks like from goal.
Well, there you go, folks. Hopefully, even before this podcast goes up, hopefully Roland has met his goal, but we look forward to more comic books from you guys in the future. And I think it's awesome that you have, I guess, in a way, kind of gotten a renewed passion to get this going again, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I love being able to share that passion. So thank you so much for asking me to come back and talk with you here, and or allowing me to come back and talk.
Not a problem. Hey, we'll have to actually, last time we kind of got off tracks a little bit when we were talking about Christian music and stuff. We're just going to have to do a podcast just completely talking about Christian music one of these days. That would be awesome.
I am so there. Speaking of which, my daughter, and it is really, really quick. My daughter moved to Nashville. Uh-huh. And so, when my wife and I were helping her move in, you know, Neil Morse is a, cause I know you sent me that Neil Morse link. Neil Morse, is a, I don't know if he's a pastor or a leader of a church there right in there in Nashville. Oh. We tried to attend that church when we were there and he had moved. He'd gone somewhere else because of COVID. So we're like, and we were all there. We were ready. We were like, hey, where's Neil Morse? And guys, like, you're looking for the band guy. I'm like, yeah. He's like, they moved before, right when COVID hit. We're like, no way. It's still on the internet. That's funny. Where the address is.
That's so funny. Yeah.
I was real disappointed.
No, that's sad. speaking of musicians that have become pastors, there was this, I don't know if you've ever heard of Tooth and Nail Records. They were a big thing back in the 90s, just a huge alternative metal and punk record label.
Right.
So there was a band that came out in the early 90s called Joy Electric was the name of the band. And the guy's name that did it was Ronnie Martin. And now this band was so out there, just a tweaky, weird band. And never in a million. And I just found out about 2 months ago, this guy's preaching. He's the main pastor at like some sort of reformed church in the Midwest. I was like, no, you gotta be kidding me.
Wow.
This guy, he's like, I mean, cause he used to dress like in all these weird 90s clothes and 90s hat. And he almost sounded like this when he sang. I mean, it's just so weird.
No,
I was like, there's no way this guy's preaching at a reformed church. It's not even a thing. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. It's like, wow, this is so cool. But anyway, that's it's neither here nor there. But again, thanks, Roland, for joining us or spending some time with us this evening. We truly appreciate it. And good luck on your comic book.
You.
And we look forward to more in the future.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.